Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the Bucs are going to the White House. First Tampa Bay team, world championship team, to have such an honor bestowed on them for various reasons. And I, Steve Versnick, will be going as well.
So you're going to see Joe?
Yeah. Well, I'll see President. I assume you mean Joe Biden, or are you talking about another Joe?
I was referring to Joe Biden, but yeah.
Yeah. The president's supposed to be there. I assume the Bucks may gift him with a number, 46 jersey? Is that right?
Yeah.
46?
No, will he know what's going on or who's there?
Why do you got to go there?
So
why
are you making? I see people on Twitter say that all the time. No,
I know, but you jump on the political thing right away, which I can't stand. We try to keep this show, not.
I just think there's a lot of funny memes about it that I just laugh at. I mean,
Yeah, it's so played.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
It's like Trump's hair. I mean, I'm just
Yeah, well, there's a lot of funny memes about that too.
Yeah, but I don't. Not funny. Not funny. Not funny. As Caliendo would say, Terry Bradshaw would say. But anyway, look, it's always an honor. This is a big deal, and it came together quickly late last week. I had reported something about this. I think on Friday, the actual invitation didn't go out until. Well, I guess White House began sending invitations to some of the players or the organization, letting them know when this would occur. It should be, and I don't think it's official yet, it should be like from noon to 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday afternoon. They're going to go up and back. They'll take a plane, a contingent up there, and then come back the same day. I don't know how many players, staff. I do know Bruce Arians is supposed to go. Tom Brady is supposed to go.
I was
going to
say, wait, is Tom going to go? Because he's good friends with Donald Trump. I mean, that's what it was all about years ago.
Well, I mean, hey, this is not, again, trying to be on the up and up. First of all, can you imagine a scenario where Tom Brady wouldn't, want his face celebrating yet another Super Bowl win at the White House or any other place for that matter? He's, he's probably been there as much or more than anybody. But I got to believe that this is all, there will be cameras rolling for Tom Brady and his production company as part of his, next documentary that I'm sure they're planning. But no, I think Tom has every expectation of going, and you know what, he should. I mean, his teammates are going to be there. This is going to be an interesting week because this week begins all about 2020. It's the visit to the White House. It's getting the ring ceremony, which is going to be Thursday, I believe, and unfortunately that's screwed up because of all the COVID protocols with the NFL. And then they quickly got to shift gears. They go from Thursday's, the best day for players when they get their rings, et cetera, after winning the Super Bowl in their families. And then Saturday they report to training camp, and Sunday's the first workout. I mean, that's how quickly you have to turn the page. But this is the final sort of taking your bows for what you for what you accomplished in 2020, which was quite a lot, and I mentioned that this is unbelievable. Like, it's every Tampa Bay team that has won a world championship or a championship in their sport has been denied what is a fairly traditional visit to the White House. And of course, we know back in 2003, right after the Bucks won, sometime after they won, the Iraq invasion occurred. So during wartime, they very rarely host this sort of stuff. And then, the Tampa Bay Lightning, of course, won in the 2003-2004 season, and then there was a lockout. So there was no NHL season after that. So that became a bit problematic, I guess, in its own right. And then last year, the Lightning's first or second championship overall, but the one they won in the bubble, it was COVID. I mean, nobody was allowed to go anywhere. They weren't allowed to play in front of fans, and the White House was pretty much shut down from visitors and things like that, and there was a lot going on politically as well. So yeah, so the Bucks finally will get their trip, and hopefully the Lightning will follow that up in due time.
Yeah, perhaps the Lightning will go in September when training camp happens, or much like the Bucks are doing, or possibly when the Lightning are in D.C. to face the Capitals this year. It could happen then, too. So,
yeah. Now, we're assuming that the NHL, I mean, we don't know what, obviously, with COVID and everything's going to do. Are we assuming they're going to go back to their normal divisions and things like that next year?
That is the assumption. I think there's still some issues with Canada and travel, although, you know, now the MLS is playing in Canada, Montreal and Toronto hosting games, and now the Blue Jays are going to be hosting games starting July 30th. They're leaving Buffalo to go back to Toronto in the Sky Dome there. And actually, it's funny. The Rays will play the Blue Jays in three different parks for road games this year.
Isn't that weird?
Dunedin, Buffalo, and Toronto.
They're going back to Toronto, thank God, after all this time.
So, you know, assuming, you know, they're making travel plans for that, I can't imagine that the NHL is going to deviate too much now going forward. So,
well, let's hope not. Let's hope everything holds tight. But, yeah, so this is a first. This is a first for Tampa Bay and you know, certainly something that I know Bruce Arians is looking forward to, a lot of the coaches and players. Listen, I'll just say this. Anytime you have a chance or you're invited to the White House, the People's House, I don't want to make this political because it shouldn't be. It's a celebration of your accomplishments, and that is hallowed ground. And I don't know, for those who are listening to podcasts, have been there. And when I say been there, you know, certainly if you've been to Washington, D.C., hopefully you've seen the monuments and done some of the touring. And, you know, the White House has not always been open, depending on what's going on in the world. But if you've had an opportunity to tour it, and usually they limit those tours, you know, in general, but also to a specific part of usually the East Wing, not the West Wing, obviously. It's really fascinating. I'm kind of a history nerd when it comes to stuff like that. Like, I love reading about the beginning of this country and particularly Washington and, you know, how D.C., the architecture and how it was laid out and why and that sort of thing. But it's a cool place. And I'll just tell a quick story. It may not be that quick, but I'll tell you a story about this is not my first trip to the White House. and I still kind of get goosebumps when I think about it because, like I said, I am a bit of a nerd. But this was a complete fluke on my part. But again, it happened because I covered the Buccaneers. Years ago, and I mean years and years ago, to the point where I couldn't exactly pinpoint the year, except to tell you that Bill Clinton was president, and it was his second term, I believe. In fact, I know it was because there are some jokes about when we were there. But it was his second term, and it turns out that it was kind of, you know, the way it came about was the Bucs were playing a preseason game in Washington against the Redskins, which they used to do quite often, and there was a guy, I think I see him on TV on CNN for now and again. If it's the same guy, and I could be wrong about this, but his name is Jack Wackrow. And he, at that time, I believe, if I got the right guy, certainly somebody whose name sounds like that, but this gentleman was the head of the Secret Service at the White House. Now, he had served several administrations, because if you think about it, if your job is to protect the White House, you probably like to have the same guy do it more than 4 years, you know, because about the time he figures out the best way to do it, you don't want to have to train somebody else. So there is a Secret Service detail specifically assigned to the White House itself, and he was in charge of all those gentlemen and anybody that were there to protect the first family and the president. And Mark Asanovich at the time was the Bucs' strength coach. And at that time, you remember when creatine was sort of like all the rage, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of athletes were doing creatine. It became controversial and then banned, actually, by the NFL and some other leagues. And creatine was one of these things that just, it jacked you up. I mean, you know, you got swole, as they say. You got some muscles out of it right away. However, it was controversial because it could potentially cause kidney damage. You had to drink a ton of water and hydrate yourself with it, like a lot of supplements. But it worked, and yet it didn't, you know, I'm not sure if it improved performance or not. But the Bucs had several players, including among them Mike Alstott, that was using creatine. It was legal at that time. So this particular Secret Service guy read a story in Sports Illustrated about creatine and about the effects of it. And Mark Asanovich, who was the Bucs' strength coach, he said basically he was against it, that he thought it was, even though his players used it, He thought it was something that probably should be banned, and wasn't a big proponent of it at the time for various things. And so this gentleman, Wackrow, invited, he said, "Hey, I see where you guys are coming up to play the Redskins in preseason. Would you like a tour of the White House?" So Sondland said, "Yeah, sure. Why not? Okay." And he didn't mean the whole team, but he meant, well, you know, tell me how many guys are coming and whatever. And they were thinking a small contingent. I caught wind of this. And Rich McKay was the GM at the time. There were several other front office people with us. And I asked McKay, there's a couple players too, not necessarily frontline guys, but I asked McKay when I heard about it, I said, is there any way I could be part of that contingent? He goes, yeah, you know, I'll see if there's room. You're welcome to come if we got room. Well, they took like two vans over there, and I got on the pass list, and I followed these guys. And the great thing about it was not only did we get to tour the White House, you know, you start off in the East Wing, very often where, you know, you'll see ceremonies in the East Wing for Medal of Honor, and the First Lady greets people there, and there's a lot of stuff. And it just, you know, some of the things in the White House itself, like, you know, they showed us a big theater that Clinton had where we would watch sports and movies, and it was pretty cool. And then, you know, the China Room where, you know, each president and first lady pick out, you know, sort of their own dishes for state dinners and things, and they're all displayed there. So the various, you know, various things. I don't know if you ever saw in The American President, there's mm-hmm. a scene where he...
The dish room.
The dish room, yes. You guys call it the dish room. And so... that was neat. But then he gets on his little, you know, little earpiece, and he says, you know, Clinton wasn't back yet. He had been somewhere, either Camp David or someplace, and he was due back in a couple hours, but he wasn't back yet. So he said, "Hey, guys, if you really hurry, I can get you over to the West Wing." Well, nobody goes to the West Wing, right? And we're like, yeah, okay. So we all, okay, come on, let's go. So they take you over there, and we go to the West Wing, and there's this room known as the Roosevelt Room because FDR won a Nobel Peace Prize. And on the mantle of this fireplace in that room is that Peace Prize. So the Roosevelt Room is there, and that's where they have a lot of their you know, Joint Chiefs of Staff meetings, and it's right outside the president's office. And not just any office, the Oval Office. So we're sitting in the Roosevelt Room, and there's, you know, one of these, I don't know how many, you know, 2 feet thick doors that swing open. And that's the Oval. And he goes, okay, if we hurry, you guys can go inside the Oval Office. And I, to this day, I still can't believe I stood inside the Oval Office, got a picture taken behind the Resolute desk, which is the desk that was used originally by Abraham Lincoln and later by John F. Kennedy. You remember the famous picture of mm-hmm. John in the center of that desk?
Yep.
And Clinton had brought it back in the Oval. And it was incredible to be there. You know, the most powerful office in the world, and to think of, you know, the history of that place and the crisis that unfolded right there, you know, beneath your feet. For a kid from 1529 Robinson Drive, I mean, you know, in St. Petersburg, I mean, this is big stuff. And so I've always held that place in high regard, and everybody should. And it's, you know, I don't know what we'll see. We walked from the East Wing through the Rose Garden, the whole deal, to the West Wing. I don't know if this ceremony will be in the Rose Garden, exactly where they're going to do it. But I'm excited to go back because it was just a, like I said, the history of that city, of that building, obviously everything that's around it, is to me, you know, just so cool. So
I have a similar story. So
do you? Cool.
I was not in the Oval Office, but fairly close.
Uh huh.
So it was 2005. I was working with the Atlanta Braves.
Right.
And one of the guys who was kind of the head of our network, his brother was a Secret Service agent in DC. So one of his best friends was one of the Secret Service agents who'd been in the White House for years. He wasn't so much like on the security detail, but kind of handled a lot of the things there. He just retired a couple years ago, actually. So he said, yeah, come on over for a tour. So great. So he's taking us around. There's regular tours going on, but he's taking us separately.
Right.
And we're upstairs at this area, and he's like, I can't go any further than this because the president's in the building today.
Yeah.
We're like, okay. You know, no problem. You know, he's like, but so he's showing us around, and we're in this room. And all of a sudden, from across, from the next room over, and there were some dividers and stuff, you hear, all right, let's eat. And we're like, that was W. I mean, it was clear as day. You could tell. Their meeting wrapped up. They went to go eat. We're like, wait, he's just on the other side of the wall? Which was really cool. So we go around a little more. He's like, yeah, we'll just cut out this way. He takes a key out, opens a door, and boom, we're in the Rose Garden. Like, what the?
Oh, wow, that's
cool,
yeah.
Just, you know, their other tours are going this way. We're going through the Rose Garden.
Yeah.
So the president's getting ready to leave on Marine One.
Marine One's out there.
So
yeah.
We're standing on the rope line. It's myself, it's Chip Carey, and Joe Simpson, Braves announcers.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the president's a big baseball fan. So he goes, sometimes the president comes over and says hi, but most of the time he doesn't. But, you know, you can, okay. So we're standing on the rope line there. The president comes out. Everyone's waving. And the president turns and looks, and, you know, he waves. And then he does a double take.
He sees Chip Carey.
Like, he's like, I know those guys. I don't know. I don't know if he figured it out. Or it was just like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
He knew something was up.
Too familiar, yeah.
You could just tell the double take he did. You know, he did the wave, and then it was like, wait a minute. But he didn't stop. He ended up going on. But we got to see Marine One take off from the lawn there, which was really cool. And but yeah, let's eat. We're like, that was W.
Let's eat.
I mean, it was clear as day. Just across the, you know, just on the other side of a wall from us. It was like, wow.
Call it baseball and Espanolo. yeah, it's
there's a lot of strategery in baseball right now.
That's right. Strategery.
The Rays do strategery really well.
Verification. Verification.
So that's my White House story.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, hey, anything, you know, near and around the president. I didn't get to see Marine One, and I didn't get to hear it. But the Oval. I mean, I had the Oval. It was incredible. And it was just, like I said, I don't know if we're going to. The other thing we did was, you know, the White House has a kitchen that's pretty much operates 24 hours a day. And it's kind of down in the basement area a little bit south. You got to go downstairs. What was cool about it was there are, you know, way back in the day, I want to say the British, somebody torched the White House. It got, you know, burned. And that's when Dolly Madison.
Yeah, it was in the War of 1812.
Yeah, grabbed the painting of George Washington and ran outside in the burning White House, and she saved it and all this stuff. So we heard all those stories. So if you go down to the kitchen area, there's an archway that goes into the kitchen, and you can look on the stone above the arch, and you can see, you know, the burn marks from that fire. It's like one of the few places they haven't covered it up or repainted it or anything like that. It's really cool. So, yeah. No, it was just really cool. And I think, again, if you're a Tampa Bay fan, you know what I mean? Like, you want the full experience, okay? So you've seen these championships. You know, the last ones, a lot of them played without full stadiums, most of them without full stadiums. Obviously, the Lightning changed that turned around in their Stanley Cup run. But, you know, this is part of being able to celebrate as a community. You've had the boat parades. You know, now you get to see your team stand up there in the Rose Garden or the White House or whatever and receive or give gifts to the president, what have you. And again, it's part of that we are the champions type of experience that every fan base should experience, and you're going to get to do that on Tuesday, so good for them. And then, of course, Thursday will be the ring ceremony, so we'll have lots to talk about with that involved. So the other thing that I thought was big over the weekend is this whole expansion draft, which is going to happen on Wednesday with the Kraken out there in Seattle. And we now know who the Lightning protected and who they didn't. Any surprises, Steve Bursting?
I think at first it was a surprise, or could have been. So what they chose to do is, instead of protecting three defensemen and seven forwards,
right,
and a goalie, of course, they protected Vasilevskiy. Right. They decided to protect four defensemen, which means you only get four forwards to protect. Mm-hmm. So they determined that Ryan McDonagh, protecting him, because they had to protect Hedman, right, because he has a no-move clause, and of course you're not going to not protect him. Sergachev and Chernek are young defensemen you want to protect and keep long-term. So the question was, do you protect Ryan McDonough or do you get three more forwards to protect? And they chose Ryan McDonough, meaning that forwards, they had to protect Stamkos and Kucherov because both of them have no move clauses, which means they couldn't be exposed in the expansion draft. They also protected Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli.
Right.
So that means Tyler Johnson, Alex Killorn, Yanni Gourde, Andre Palat, Ross Colton, Mitchell Stevens, Patrick Maroon. All those guys are exposed.
Is Ross Colton exposed?
Yes.
Oh.
He's only in his first year, but he's in his second NHL contract. He's a college guy. He's an older guy. He's 24.
So I didn't realize he was exposed.
Mm-hmm. Alex Barry-Boulay.
Yeah.
Now, the other move that happened over the weekend, too, so people know, Barclay Goodrow, his rights were traded to the Rangers for a seventh-round draft pick. Barclay Goodrow is an unrestricted free agent. Free agency starts on the 28th. The Lightning were going to lose him.
This allows the Rangers to negotiate and try to reach
an
agreement.
Right, and the word is they're close on a deal. That'll happen before free agency. And the word around the league was Barclay was going to get a six-year deal. Teams were ready to offer him 6 years, which the Lightning just really couldn't manage. So they got a seventh-round draft pick for him. Blake Coleman's also an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll try to re-sign him, maybe not. They are going to have to shed some payroll. But to me, what this says, by keeping Ryan McDonough, if you want to go for a third straight cup, if you're serious about winning a third straight cup next year, then you had to protect Ryan McDonough. Seeing how well he played this playoffs, how well he played this year, you needed to protect your top 4D.
Right.
Because, okay, Sergachev and Hedman and Chernak are your top three, but who's your fourth defenseman? You know, Jan Ruda? I mean, he plays with Hedman, but he doesn't get those kind of minutes. Right. David Savard's a free agent.
No.
You know, Luke Shen, maybe you bring him back on a team-friendly deal. He's a free agent, too. Cal Foote, who's exposed, he's a restricted free agent. You'll bring him back, assuming Seattle doesn't take him.
Now, how many can Seattle claim off one team?
One. One per team.
Just one?
Yes, one per team.
Okay.
Now, it's possible Julian Breezeball has a side deal with Seattle so that they take a certain player. They did that with Vegas in 2017. They gave up a second-round draft pick plus the rights to Nikita Gusev for the Golden Knights to take Jason Garrison, who they wanted to get rid of his contract. He had a year left. I don't remember. It was like $4 or $5 million, but they needed to get rid of that contract. And they, you know, he wasn't in their plans going forward. So they traded a second-round pick and the rights to Nikita Gusev. They hadn't signed him, but they owned his rights to do that. Now, the word around the league is Seattle's costs have been extremely high. Like, you want us to take your guy? It's a first and a third. That's what's been rumored around the league. Now that the expansion lists are out there, we know who's protected and who's not, maybe the price comes down for Seattle. And it may depend on, hey, we really want you to take, let's say it's Alex Killorn off our hands.
Right.
And maybe they really want Alex Killorn. Maybe they really want Alex Killorn. So it's like, okay, well, you know, we can go for less. I mean, you know, now that the lists are out there and you know who's protected, and you saw a flurry of trades before Saturday's, before everyone had to turn in their protected list, because they, you know, instead of losing a player for nothing, some, you know, teams got something.
Right.
The expansion draft is Wednesday. Seattle right now has, I believe, a 48-hour window to negotiate with unrestricted free agents. So if they sign say they sign Blake Coleman, they go to him. The free agency doesn't start till the 28th, but so they go to him this week, come to a deal. He wants to go there. Then the Lightning won't lose a player because they signed him. Most free agents, I don't think, are going to do that because.
So no players are exposed if you re-sign a free agent.
Yeah, if they sign one of your free agents. In this they have a window of for 48 hours.
Seattle has a 48
Seattle
hour
does
window.
Correct. Yeah. Yes,
got it.
But if you're willing to test free agency, why would you want to sign before you get to see what everybody else?
Yeah,
wants
they'd
to
have
offer?
To blow you away. Yeah, they'd have to.
Or
have to,
you really want to be there? Maybe you're from that area, or
perhaps
you really like to coach, or I mean, there's things that you may go, hey, I really want to be in Seattle, or it was Vegas back 4 years ago. But they do have that opportunity, or hey, they offered a contract we think is bigger than we can get on the free agent market. Most players or agents tend to know what a player's worth about.
Right.
They want to blow you away? Great.
So how does this, I mean, here's the thing. I see these names, and a couple of them, you know, really, you think about losing a Yanni Gourde, for example, mm-hmm. who is such an energy guy, such a relentless player. You know, one of the reasons I think that they've been successful these last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
You could say a lot about Palat, too. I mean, Ross Colton, I mean, that guy looks like a real promising young star. He had mm-hmm. the biggest moment with his goal in Game 7, and it's surprising. And you just don't know which way Seattle's going to go. A lot of it will have to do with the other players that are available on that list from other teams.
Well, that's the thing, is everyone looks at this in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Who would you take off the Lightning?
Yeah.
Well, it depends on, you know, they're looking at the big board, because there's a couple things Seattle has to do. One, they have to draft, I think it's over $60 million worth of players.
Okay.
So they can't just take all rookies. You can't just say we're going all 21-year-old, 22-year-old rookies.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got to take some contracts on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got a floor to hit in salary. There's that. Now, one of the things Vegas did very well is, first of all, you're going to be drafting 30 players. You're not going to have 30 players on your roster. So some of these players you're going to draft and then trade. You're going to maybe there's a team that really wants Alex Killorn. So Seattle could draft him and then trade him to someone else. And Alex may not be the right, because he's got a modified no trade clause, so there's teams he couldn't be traded to per se. But
right, but they could use that strategically to get more draft picks.
Right. So, because they can't keep 30 players on the roster.
Yeah, right.
So they may take some guys they plan to put in AHL, but there's also going to be some guys they flip immediately. And Vegas did this too. There was a few players they drafted and flipped right away.
Mm-hmm.
And got mostly draft picks at that point, or young prospects that they could put in the AHL in that's building for the future. Because like I said, you're drafting 30 players, but you can't keep 30. Your roster is 23 during the season. But the other part that Vegas did very well is they did not take term on deals. Jason Garrison, who the Lightning wanted them to take, did a side deal. He had 1 year left on his deal. So after 1 year, they were off the hook, and their salary going into their second year, they could do anything they wanted with, re-sign guys or go out and sign big free agents, or because there may have been Marc-Andre Fleury they took. He had some term to his deal. But for the most part, the guys they took that had money on their deals were only 1 year left on.
They were 1 year, yeah.
That's a guy like Andre Palat, who's
and a guy, yeah,
got Palat. one year at $5.3 million on his deal.
And a guy like Killorn has 3 years, I believe, right?
Killorn's got two. But he's at a very friendly number of $4.45 million as far as a cap hit.
Yeah,
That's a pretty friendly number for a guy like Killorn. Mm-hmm. Yanni Gourde's got 4 years left at $5.166 million.
Yeah, but what a player. I mean,
And they may take him. But he's also 29, too. He's a little older.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Johnson's got 3 years left at $5 million.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if I'm looking at the roster, and granted, I'm looking in a vacuum because I'm not looking around.
Yeah, you don't have the list. Yeah,
well, you know, in knowing what they think. But Yanni Gourde looks enticing, but he does have 4 years left.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Johnson's got three. I think Andre Palat's enticing because he's got 1 year left at 5'3".
Yeah.
That's a very enticing pick. But, you know, the one that may really be enticing is Cal Foote.
Or what about Ross Colton? What about the other young guy?
Ross Colton, too. But, you know, a young defenseman that mm-hmm. did well in his time in Tampa this year, getting his first taste of the NHL. He's 22 years old. Yeah. Got some offensive skill, improving on the defensive end. A right-handed shot defenseman, which sometimes are harder to find than left-handed shots.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Cal Foote's a very enticing pick for Seattle. Yeah. Ross Colton is too, don't get me wrong. And maybe Alex Barry-Boulet, if you really think he's got a high ceiling. I mean, you know, the Lightning played him on the top line for 7 or 8 games this year.
Right.
You're not putting him up with Stamka or with Point and Palat if you don't think he's got skill.
Now, assuming that, like, one of these guys is likely to be picked, but what about the ones that are on the list? That are they all coming back? Are some still going to be dealt? Or some still going to be optioned? I mean,
they still more than likely. Well, if a young guy's taken, a Colton, a Barry-Boulet, they'll definitely need to shed more payroll.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're at, I want to say they're $3.5-4 million over the cap for next year, and they've only got 17 players signed.
Mm.
You know, you don't have a backup goalie on the roster yet.
Right.
You only have five defensemen on the roster. Now, Cal Foote's a restricted free agent. You re-sign him if he's not drafted. You got some young guys we'll call up. But, yeah, they're going to have to shed some more payroll, particularly if Seattle doesn't take a big contract.
Right.
If they don't take Palat or Gordon or Johnson or Killorn. You know, if they're taking a Ross Colton who's, you know, going to make, well, he's got arbitration rights and he's a restricted free agent. He may make, you know, $1 million this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if they don't take a big contract. And so, you know, you look at this, some big names out there. I mean, Carey Price was unprotected by the Canadiens.
Yeah, I saw that.
He waived his no-move clause, and he's, you know, that's a, I don't think Seattle ever envisioned him being out there. But they wanted to protect Jake Allen as their backup.
Mm-hmm.
Presuming that Seattle wouldn't take his contract. I think he's got 5 years at like $12 million a year left or something.
Maybe you get, and he's older, but maybe like another Marc-Andre Fleury type situation where you have a veteran goaltender that can play.
Right. Well, you could do that, but you could also take Carey Price and flip him. I mean, Carey Price is 10-5 for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could then go trade him to somebody too. So, I mean, there's lots of things to look at as far as, you know, it's easy to sit there and go, oh, they're going to lose Yanni Gourde for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but there's also, what forwards do they view as, you know, where do they rank Yanni Gourde among the forwards? You know, I mean, does anyone think Yanni Gourde's a top line center?
Not on this team, he's not.
Well, but I mean, on any team, do you think he's a top line center?
No, probably not.
Is he a second line center?
Yeah, maybe. It depends on the team.
Maybe. And so, you know, this is where you're, you know, you have to look at how you're going to build your team and go, okay, a guy that's making $5.16 million.
Yeah.
If he's going to be a third or fourth line center for us,
right?
Is that worth it in our, you know? You know, every team's in your, but you're looking at across the league of, okay, let's take on Carey Price's contract. There's $10.5 million. Okay. That's 12% of the cap this year that we've already, you know. So as you're building this team, you're trying to figure that out, but you're also seeing, you know, okay, this team has interest in Yanni Gourde. Maybe I draft him and trade him and flip him.
There's a reason for all those guys to be on that list. I would just say this. Tell me the one guy on that list that, he's on there strategically for one reason or another to protect other players that they, like you said, McDonough or whoever they deem better for their situation. But tell me the one guy that if, you know, truth serum, sodium pentothal was in Julian Brisebois' veins, who says, I really don't want them to take this guy. Who would it be? One guy.
I'll say two. It's Yanni Gourde and Andre Palat.
Okay.
For this year.
Okay.
You know, trying to win a back-to-back.
A three-peat, yeah.
Yes. Andre Palat on that top line. I think he complements Point and Kucherov so well on that line.
Yeah.
And Yanni Gourde, I think he provides an energy not just to his line but the team.
Yeah.
And I think knowing that you've lost Gaudreau and most likely have lost Coleman.
I think it's Gourde. I like Palat too. And I would have said one of those two.
And I like Killorn a lot. And I really don't want to lose Killorn either. I mean, now.
But keep in mind, they won six. They played six, four games without him in the Stanley Cup final and won.
Well, look, I mean.
They don't get there without him. I'm just saying he's a big part of their hockey team. But.
Yeah. And here's the other thing of why Julian Brisebois protected four defensemen and only four forwards is that they have forward depth in their organization. They don't have a ton of defensive depth.
Right, right.
And so you need Ryan McDonough for next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've got Cal Foote, you've got Ben Thomas, you've got a couple others that you hope can come up from AHL and give you some minutes. And maybe if Luke Shen will sign another team-friendly deal, he's back next year. They re-signed Frederick Claesson, who they had traded for this year from San Jose, a two-way contract, so he can go between the NHL and AHL next year. But they don't have a ton of top-end defensive depth in this organization. And, you know, so the next one I'd hate to lose, although it's not necessarily for this year to repeat, but is Cal Foote. You know, you don't have a ton of defensive depth in this organization. And, you know, they're probably going to have to continue to do free agent signings. Now, there's been some big-name defensive players that just got bought out this week. Keith Yandel in Florida, Brent Suter in Minnesota. if you remember Kevin Shattenkirk 2 years ago, he was bought out by the Rangers. So the Lightning were able to sign him for like less than $2 million because he was getting paid $3 or $4 million from New York as part of his buyout deal. So he was able to sign a very team-friendly deal for a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk. There could be some opportunities that way, but Ryan McDonagh, you know, him and Chernek together as your shutdown defensive pair allows Hedman not to be on your shutdown defensive pair. I mean, that's the other part of what Ryan McDonagh and what he does is it allows Hedman not to necessarily play against the top lines. So he can be more offensive in nature and do what he does and play that full 200-foot game. And so, you know, Julien Brisebois made this decision, in my opinion, on this is all about three-peating next year. Even though we're going to have to shed some payroll, some guys are going to be gone. We know Goodrow is, we've already traded. Coleman's most likely gone. But this is all about, if we can keep that top four defense together, Root is your fifth, whether it's Luke Shen or Calfoot or Ben Thomas or maybe another guy you sign, we're going to be fine on the back end. We've got Andre Vasilevsky behind that. We've got enough depth at forward that we'll be fine. It's about, as John Cooper always says, it's not about how many you put in the net, it's how many you keep out.
No doubt. No doubt. And listen, I would trust the guy implicitly. It's one of those mm-hmm. deals where everybody's going to lose a player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of guys on that list to get, you know, everybody has an attachment to emotionally. I know when I read it to my girls, they were like, no. But if you understand, they can only take one, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they don't lose five. It's not like here's the list and they can pick whoever they want, how many they want.
Exactly.
It's one per team.
It's one per team. So, you know, one of those guys will get claimed possibly, and we'll see what happens after that. But it is sort of numbing when you see that list and you see guys like Gordon Plott on there and Killorn.
Well, for the first time in this 8-year run that they've had, 7-8 seasons that they've been, you know, extremely successful, is that this is the first time they've had to really get rid of players. I mean, last year they traded Cedric Paquette and Braden Coburn to free up some salary space. And then with the Nikita Kucherov going on long-term injury relief, they didn't have to make some of those decisions last year like they thought they had.
Right.
That this is what happens when you get really good.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's going to happen to the Bucks at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just now for the first time started, you know, signing deals of, you know, that's going to have some money in the future.
They kicked the can down the road. Yeah, they absolutely did because they see the window, and that's what the Lightning see. They see a window here where you can win it all, win the Stanley Cup. And what are you playing for? I always say this: if you're not playing to win a championship, then what are you building? I mean, if you're there and you've just won two in a row and your core is together and you think you can make it three in a row, then you go for it. That's why Tom Brady is here. That's why, you know, the Bucks will do what they can to push some salary cap money and. That's why they have 22 starters back. You know, I think there's a lot of parallels between what the Lightning did and bringing everybody back, you know, keeping that group together to try to make another run and go back-to-back is with what the Bucks are trying to do exactly the same thing. And, you know, those guys, you know, they understand that. They understand that this is a small window. If you're Ndamukong Suh, if you're Jason Pierre-Paul, if you're Shaq Barrett, who re-signed and may have left some money on the table, but, you know, came back for, and listen, we're not holding telethons here, is $72 million. But nonetheless, he didn't look around very long or very hard because he wanted to be part of the same group and go back to back. And I think that's what happened in the case of the Lightning. It's the same reason why so many of these guys are returning with the Bucks, and, you know, that window is there. So you got to go for it. I mean, you have to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to win it all. So.
Well, and that's why, you know, the last 2 years they traded a number one draft pick for Barclay Goodrow, number one draft pick, and a former number one draft pick, Nolan Foote prospect, to get Blake Coleman.
Yep.
And then they traded a number one draft pick to get David Savard.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they're going for it. They have for the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this move of protecting Ryan McDonagh instead of your bevy of forwards.
Right.
Shows me that you think you're going to win again this year, or that's your plan. You're going for it again this year.
And why wouldn't you? I mean, listen,
absolutely.
You know, this is the best team in hockey, and their core is so solid. And I'm sorry, but if 88 is between the pipes, you have a chance every year. It's just like if Tom Brady's your quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what team he's on. You know, you're thinking about a Super Bowl because a guy has gone there half of his career. And he's won seven of them now. So I mean, yeah, that's what you do. When you have those type of players in your system, then you try to win championships in as many as you can. Mm-hmm. I remember I've had this conversation with people. You know, the trade for John Gruden bankrupt that franchise in terms of draft picks. Two number ones, two number twos, and then the $8 million. But you know, it eventually caught up to him. The bill came due. But there isn't anybody I've ever talked to that said, would you make that trade for John Gruden again? They all, to a person, say yes, because they won a Super Bowl. Now, you would like to not have seen, you know, 12 years without playoffs after Gruden was let go. But, you know.
Yeah, but there were some organizational decisions.
That wasn't Gruden's fault.
When they got rid of Gruden, they spent 3 years of spending no money.
Exactly. And it was uncapped years and the Glazers bought Man U. There's a lot of reasons we can get into about that. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, Gruden brought them a Super Bowl, went to a couple more playoffs after that, won a division after that. And, you know, then the time ran out on them. But everybody would do that again. And I think that's the case with the Bucks. There will come a time in the not so distant future when Tom Brady, whenever that is, if he doesn't play till he's 50, but let's say he just plays two more years. There's going to be some lean times in terms of salary cap.
Well, until Aaron Rodgers signs here, I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that would have been my strategy is, you know, do a futures deal with Aaron Rodgers and make a trade there.
They may have been done with the golf course. You don't know. I mean, you know, they might have worked out something.
Yeah. I mean, the timing couldn't be. Yeah, that's another thing. We are just days away now. I mean, this time next week, we'll be talking to you about the first practice of training camp. Can you believe that? And we'll see if Aaron Rodgers shows up to his training camp when the time comes. But and I suspect he will. That's just my gut. I still don't think he's going to sit out a year, and I don't know, you know, that the Packers would ever entertain the idea of trading him now. That's going to be something to watch. But, yeah, it should be interesting. So, yeah, go for it, and don't get too upset because most of those players, if not all but one, are coming back to the Tampa Bay Lightning. They'll decide what they're going to do with that.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Rays continue their role. They've won now 8 out of 10. They come back against a pretty good Atlanta team over the weekend after the All-Star break and win 2 out of 3. The only game that got away from them, Josh Fleming wasn't very sharp there. I think they got beat 9-0 in that one.
Yeah, Max Fried was really good for Atlanta that game.
Yeah, he was lights out. And I think you mentioned this. It wasn't the best defensive series that the Rays had played, although the catch by Kevin Kiermaier on Sunday was spectacular and likely saved a couple of runs.
Yeah, there were lots of extra outs given.
A lot of them, yeah. Yeah, just not Rays, not really the Rays type of playing, type of baseball. But, hey, credit them for both Friday night and Sunday afternoon. They came from behind and won those games. They finally won a game on Friday in extra innings, something they hadn't done in quite a while on the road.
That's 28 come-from-behind victories this year for the Rays.
That's just phenomenal. I mean, that's big time stuff.
Well, and Neil Solans was talking about this on the radio postgame show. When you have a great bullpen, and right. The Rays statistically,
they do,
their bullpen's the best in baseball, ERA yeah. and that.
Absolutely.
That when you have a great bullpen, if you can just stay close, because when you get to the bullpen, you're pretty confident they're going to shut them down most nights. You just need to keep staying close.
Right.
And if their starter's good, try to get their starter out and get to the other. I mean, Atlanta's bullpen's a mess, which they came back on Atlanta's bullpen twice.
Twice, yeah.
You know, most teams don't have the bullpen the Rays do.
No.
You know, and the Rays are doing this with some injury. You know, Oliver Drake's not there. Nick Anderson's not there.
Right.
Diego Castillo's not even near the top of your high leverage.
He's not being used, yeah, for high leverage, no.
I mean, you know, they don't really have an A and B bullpen, but you know, there's a lot of guys that have passed Castillo on the high leverage situations. If you watch recently, you know, they have a lot of good arms back there, and you know, you just need to stay close in games.
Yeah,
and you know, wait for your bats to wake up sometimes, and
right.
You know, get through a starter that's rolling, and you know, get to their bullpen, and your bullpen will keep it close as long as you don't give up a six spot like Fleming did on Saturday in the fourth inning.
I mean, listen, the Yankees battered the Boston Red Sox on, I guess it was Sunday night, and so like now the Rays are just a half game back out of first place. The Baltimore Orioles are coming to town. That's a team that they have owned, and a lot of teams have owned over the last few years. So, you know, a chance to beat up on those guys and win another series at home. So
now you're only half game behind Boston.
That's what I said. You can find the Rays back in the lead in the AL East here in just minutes. I mean, it's you know, going to be that quick that they could be back on top. And again, playing good baseball, 8 out of 10 that they have won. So no reason for Kevin Cash and those guys to not think that they're going to take this and keep going. I still think I would love to see them with another starting pitcher. I don't know. You know, their bullpen has been lights out. If I had to add one thing, maybe that would be it. I've been impressed, though, by the way the at-bats have gone. Austin Meadows is an RBI machine. He's doing this not just with home runs but with base hits. He had two sack flies on Sunday for RBI, so he's driving in a ton of runs. Lau still hitting the ball well.
Who would have thought he'd be leading the team in home runs at this point after the start he got off to?
After the start, yeah. He's definitely hitting the big fly, but he just looks more confident, swinging the bat really well. Wander Franco looks lost a little bit, although he had a big day on Sunday, including a home run. It's going to take him some time, particularly he's been struggling, batting left-handed.
Yes.
I think he's around 200 or so overall. So, I'll ask you this question, and there's – I think I know the answer. They traded – Well, I mean, they traded Willie Adames knowing that Wander Franco would eventually be here, okay?
Well, and they also think Taylor Walls is a better defensive shortstop.
And they think
than
Taylor Walls right now is a better defensive shortstop. And so Walls was going to take over. So they created that room. They carved that space out. And now we have Walls and Franco and Brujan up here. Have you seen what Willie Adames has done in Milwaukee?
Well, first of all, if you've watched Willie Adames here the last few years, knowing that he wasn't going to play any more games at the Trop immediately raises batting average like 50 points because he always hit well on the road. He just couldn't hit at the Tropicana Field.
So now every game he plays is on the road, so he's okay now because Milwaukee is now his road team.
You know, and I saw someone tweeted, it wasn't us, but, you know, boy, the Brewers just eviscerated the Rays in that trade for Willie Adames.
Right.
First of all, J.P. Fireisen's been a pretty good pitcher.
He's helped that bullpen. Yeah, it's been lights out.
The Rays think Drew Rasmussen's going to be the better pitcher long term in that deal. And you were able to call up young guys. I mean, to me, to be honest,
it's win-win.
The Milwaukee trade looks like a win-win trade. Milwaukee got what they wanted. They needed a shortstop.
Yes.
They needed an energy guy and a guy to help in the
clubhouse.
And
he sparked them right away.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, something like 16 games over 500 since. The Rays are 10 games over 500 since they traded Adames, and that included a 7-game losing streak.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's not like the Rays, you know. No.
They didn't
Did
go
you want to get rid of Willie?
Got,
no, you didn't.
Yeah.
But you had guys in the system. You needed help in the bullpen. And so you made a deal. And it turns out it's going to be, it looks like at this point, a win-win for both sides. That's what trades are supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, it's not often you get the you know, Chris Archer for Tyler Glass now, right. Shane Boz and
Austin Meadows.
And Austin Meadows deal.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen very often. Most of the time, it's a win-win deal. I mean, you know,
right. The
David Price deal for Willie Adames. It looked early on like the Tigers got the best of it, but the Rays didn't get Willie Adames once he gets up to the big leagues and that. I mean, you know, like I said, the guy that was tweeting that the Brewers eviscerated. Well, first of all, Rasmussen's a young pitcher. Fireisen's been good in the bullpen. I mean, how do you say they've been eviscerated? Yes, Adames has done great in Milwaukee. And you know, good for him, and it's great, and that's the reason Milwaukee traded for him, and it's working out, and you love to see it for Will. You love to see it for guys like that.
Yeah, I'm happy for him.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He's gone through those stretches here too with the home runs, hitting a lot of balls the other way to right field, and the power. I think he's driven in quite a few runs in the games that he's played. So you know, good. It is you're happy for him, and we'll see. You know, what happens to the Brewers down the road. Tell you what. The city of Milwaukee getting ready to celebrate another championship, an NBA championship.
They're not quite Tampa Bay, but they're trying to come close.
They're trying to get there, man. I mean, you know, they need one more win over the Phoenix Suns and they're NBA champions.
And the Brewers are running away right now with the Central.
Yeah.
They've really
we'll
distanced
see if
themselves.
Aaron Rodgers comes back. I mean, what if, you know? Can turn quickly.
It can.
You never know. It's a great great sports town up there, and they're really enjoying. I'm enjoying the NBA. I've gotten into the NBA playoffs now. I'm a big Giannis fan. I really love what he represents and kind of how he goes about his job. And to win three in a row after being down 2-0 is a pretty good story. So I'm kind of hoping they close that thing out. But that's been fun to watch. So finally, on I don't know if you saw, I love watching the Open Championship from Great Britain because it's over at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Yes. I get to watch it early in the morning. Colin Morikawa wins the Open Championship. He does it.
He was so good.
Two strokes over Jordan Spieth. He just lapped the field. I mean, this thing turned in a hurry. Oostenhaizen had the lead for 3 days and got off to kind of a rocky start. Spieth made his charge, and Morikawa just expanded the lead. Like, pressure does funny things to people. As John Gruden used to say, it'll burst a pipe. But for Morikawa, he got better as the finish line got closer, and a lot of times that's not the case. Mm-hmm. Listen, I've always said this. He's 24 years old. He's, one or two or three golfers that have won two majors by age 25 or whatever. Special when you're talking about sports, or for that matter, entertainment, or anything. If you're special, it shows up early. It shows up at an age when it's not expected.
Well, Morikawa, I believe this was the first time he'd ever played Lynx golf.
It is. He had never played Lynx golf. Mm-hmm. And he's won. He's the first one, I think, to have won in his first entry in those two majors, the PGA and the British Open, or the Open Championship in Great Britain. So his first start, I mean, if you can imagine that, is just remarkable to do what he's done. And he was a tremendous junior golfer and all that stuff, you know, coming up. But, boy, the poise. And what I like about – what's interesting about him, he plays a game that is old school a little bit. He's not the longest hitter.
No.
By far
his
on the tour.
His iron game, though. It's always lethal. Picks the right distance.
Oh, he just hits a lot of fairways and a lot of greens. And he got his putter fixed. I mean, he's really knocking down some putts now. So
that's what Tiger Woods never got a lot of credit for, but he always had the right distance on his iron shots.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't always the right spot per se.
But his misses were good. Like, he knew where to miss.
Yeah, they're not missing short or long. They're, right. You know, that's in Morikawa with his irons. Like I said, off the tee's not the best, but with that iron game, you make up for it.
But he hits a lot of fairways. He's just not long. You know, he plays the game the way it was played years and years ago. Now, of course, you guys got like guys like DeChambeau, you know, driving 400-yard, you know, par fours to the green. But listen, he was spectacular. And when, like I said, when they down the stretch, this thing, you know, can teeter either way. You screw up and bogey one hole, and the other guy birdies, is a two shot swing.
Well,
so
Spieth lost the tournament on Saturday.
He did.
He was in a tie with Morikawa and Oostenhaizen.
Yeah.
And then he bogeyed
17
two of the last
and 18.
Three holes,
he had looks at birdie at 17 and 18, and wound up three putting for bogey. And when he walked off 18, he was so mad that he went straight to the putting green and stormed off. But those two holes, obviously, with two shots there, if he just pars those two holes, and like I said, he had a look at birdie at both of them, he winds up in a virtual tie. You know, of course, ifs and buts, right? Pressure does funny things. You don't know what happens on Sunday if that's the case, but he lost by two shots, and those are the two shots, and he referenced them when he was talking in the post-match. He was saying, you know, yeah, but for those two holes in 17 and 18 on Saturday, obviously I'd have been in a much different position. But he did make a run. He's playing better. You know, he still is his own worst enemy. Sometimes I think he beats himself up, but it's good to see him back in it. That talk about a guy that, you know, what he went like three out of four majors, I think, there for a while when he came out of the gates and under, you know, 25.
Hasn't won a major since 17, I think.
No, but he finally did win a golf tournament this year, and it looks like his game is back. And, you know, it's good to see him back in contention. He finished second. Oostenhaizen, you know, just can't seem to have a good Sunday. He's in the running or in the lead on all these majors, but can't seem to close
the
deal.
He's been, second six times at a major?
It's incredible, yeah. And I think it's been 10 years since he won one, or won his only major, I believe. So, yeah, it was really entertaining to watch. I love morning golf. I like it better than afternoon golf, so that was a lot of fun. So we had – you know, it's the last weekend, Steve, before training camp. I mean, this is it. This is over.
And the Olympics. I mean, they're going to start this Friday.
They start
you think they
opening
finish?
Ceremonies on Friday. I don't. I will listen. I hope I'm wrong. I don't like the way this is trending at all. I mean, there are athletes before they check into the village over there have tested positive for COVID and are sent back. I just think that this is, you know, for whatever reason, I'm nervous about it. I mean, it's once every 4 years they put it off, and you wonder, you know, what if there is some kind of a spread of an infection in that Olympic camp, because those athletes are pretty close, if you know what I mean. So it's just,
well, except,
you know,
for the beds, you can only.
Oh,
well,
yeah, you can't get too
beds.
Close. Yeah, they're made of cardboard to keep multiple people off of them, but. But yeah, I mean, I hope so. I love the Olympics. I love watching them, and I haven't been to one, unfortunately. My wife has in Greece, but I'm excited that they're here, and I hope that they get to compete. It's always a nice change to see, and Morikawa is going over there to Japan. The USA basketball not playing all that well in the lead up to this thing. That'll be something to watch. And, of course, LeBron and some of those other guys aren't in it. Steph Curry.
Yeah, they're going to get Devin Booker once the finals are done. He'll join the team. And
that'll help, yeah.
I think Drew Holiday, too.
Yeah.
From the Bucks. So.
Yeah. And he made a
huge play.
They
got some reserves coming.
That game the other night in Milwaukee with the steal by Holiday and the dunk by Giannis, it was really something to watch. So, excited about that. I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Let's have our mailbag segment, because I've got three or four questions that people have sent in. I know there were a couple left over the other day. I know that Bucks training camp is around the corner. Tomorrow I'll talk to you about – I'll give you five reasons. This was in Sunday's Tampa Bay Times if you want a preview of it, and on TampaBay.com. Five reasons why Tom Brady will be better. That's right. I said better in 2021 than he was in 2020. We'll talk about that. We'll do your mailbag. You can send your questions in. Plenty of time here. Do it on Twitter if you want to, at SportsDayTB. You can send it to me on Twitter, at NFL Stroud. My email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. We'll probably have Tom Jones later this week.
He will be. He'll be on Thursday's show.
Fantastic. We got the Bucks visiting
Wednesday
the
show
White
we'll be
House.
Doing after, yeah, Wednesday show will be doing after you visit the White House Tuesday.
Yes. I'll be up and back, coming back, so it'll be late when we tape it, but I'll be back from the White House. I'll tell you, all my government secrets that I learned while I was there, who killed Kennedy, all that. No, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I hope we get a chance to tour a little bit of the White House. I know it's going to be a whirlwind. It's going to be in and out, but
just a word of advice: don't drink too many Dr. Peppers.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Forrest Gump. I got a pee. Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. What was the other thing that let's see when I was up there before? What was it? No, I can't remember. I'm a little nervous about just how, you know, just the mechanics of getting in and out of the White House and where I'm going to work. Is there a place that they could put me in the White House press room? Am I going to be at a courtyard somewhere, you know, on 8th Street? I really don't know in Georgetown.
There's a big library in town you could go to, probably.
There's probably a few, right?
Well, I was thinking the Library of Congress, but, you know.
Congress? Yeah. I could try.
I'm sure there's more than one, but you know.
Yeah, I could try that. There's a few places I'm sure that has internet connection. I don't need much, but look for me up there. I will be somewhere near the team. I don't know how close we'll get as a media corps, but I did get the invitation and the inquiry where you have to, you know, let them do the FBI search. So hopefully. My associations with people like you and others won't keep me out of the White House.
Yeah, wait till they call for a reference.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you think of this guy? But no, I'm looking forward to it. So it should be a lot of fun. Should be a lot of fun with the ring ceremony later this week. We'll tell you about the rings and what they look like, and hopefully we'll get a peek of them. Again, that thing's kind of messed up with all the protocols with respect to COVID and that sort of thing. And then training camp. Like I said, players report Saturday, first practice Sunday. So it's a busy week. It's our last week before the start of football. Football, NFL football, college football, SEC media days are this week as well. Matt Baker, I think, is in Alabama. Lovely Hoover, I believe.
Alabama,
I'm going to talk to Urban Meyer. Nope, he's in Jacksonville. Who we got?
It's beautiful. Hoover, Alabama, where they do the
Hoover.
Media days.
Yeah.
Which that's where I lived when I lived in Birmingham. So
you did. That's right. Just a suburb of Birmingham. So maybe we'll have a chance to talk to Matt this week. Who knows? We got lots of plans, but keep it right here on Sports Day Tampa Bay. We appreciate you guys listening. For Steve Burstick, I am Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.